More attacks and more civilians killed in Ukraine's east.
Volodymyr Zelensky denounced Russian airstrikes, coinciding with the observance of Orthodox Palm Sunday.
Every bright Christian holiday teaches us that we may not know how, but we must be sure that evil will lose.
Plus, the worldwide impact of leaked Pentagon documents about the war in Ukraine continues to mount.
There are a number of agencies trying to assess the damage from this, and what is unsaid is they're also trying to find out who is responsible.
And later in the program, Ukrainian coal miners doing what coal miners do to keep the lights on. Today is Monday, April 10th. From the Voice of America in Washington, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish. Russian forces have stepped up attacks on two Ukrainian cities in the east. This as Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky denounced Moscow's airstrikes that killed civilians on Orthodox Palm Sunday. He said that Russia was further isolating itself from the world. Reuters' Diane Toh reports.
Russian forces are focusing a barrage of attacks along the front in two Ukrainian cities in the eastern Donetsk region. That's according to Ukraine's military, as Kyiv said on Sunday it repelled more than 40 enemy strikes over 24 hours. According to the General Staff of Ukrainian Armed Forces, fighting has been heaviest along the western approaches to Bakhmut, which, along with Avdiivka, have been targeted by Russia's military. Russian forces have been besieging Bakhmut for months in the longest battle in more than a year of war. In his nightly video address, Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky denounced Russian airstrikes, coinciding with the observance of Orthodox Palm Sunday.
Every bright Christian holiday teaches us that we may not know how, but we must be sure that evil will lose. We have to bring the defeat of evil closer, and we are bringing it closer.
Zelensky also lashed out at Moscow over the deaths of a 50-year-old man and his 11-year-old daughter, who were killed as Russian forces struck their home in the southeastern city of Zaporizhia. Ukraine's State Emergency Service said a woman identified as the wife and mother of the victims was pulled alive from under the rubble.
This is how the terrorist state spends Palm Sunday. This is how Russia puts itself in even greater isolation from the world and from humanity.
The majority of Ukraine's 41 million people are Orthodox Christians who celebrate Easter a week from now. Russia's defense ministry said on Sunday its forces had destroyed a depot with 70,000 tons of fuel near Zaporizhia. It added that Russian troops had destroyed Ukrainian army warehouses storing missiles, ammunition and artillery in the regions of Zaporizhia and Donetsk. Reuters could not verify the battlefield reports.
Reuters' Diane Toh reporting for us today. Multiple U.S. government agencies, including the Defense and Justice Departments, are aggressively working to assess the national security impact of the recent leaks of highly classified military and intelligence documents related to Russia's war in Ukraine. Officials are scrambling to identify the leak's source, which some Western security experts suspect could be someone from the United States. For an update on the situation, my colleague Lori London spoke with VOA's chief national correspondent, Steve Herman.
What can you tell us about what you know so far about the investigation?
Well, this is something so serious that there were a number of people working at the Pentagon and presumably at the intelligence agencies over the weekend. And we even had an Easter Day news release from the Department of Defense, which, of course, is highly unusual. And in that latest statement, a deputy press secretary, Sabrina Singh, says that the Pentagon is assessing the validity of the documents, which, quote, appear to contain sensitive and highly classified material. And as you mentioned, there are a number of agencies trying to assess the damage from this. And what is unsaid is they're also trying to find out who is responsible. What's really remarkable, I spoke to a researcher with the Netherlands-based Bellingcat Investigative Journalism Group that specializes specializes in fact-checking and open source intelligence, and they have pretty well determined that the documents started spreading from a server on Discord, which, unless you're a young person who's into online gaming, you've probably never heard of. But there's also some evidence based on Bellingcat's investigation and talking to some of the people on that Discord site that the materials may have first been posted online as early as January, but this didn't blow up until the New York Times did a story on it late last week. Most of these documents relate to analysis presumably done by analysts at the Pentagon and perhaps at the CIA and other intelligence agencies about the war in Ukraine. There's no doubt that the release of this is damaging because it references signal intelligence of some U.S. allies. And we do need to point out, although these documents apparently run more than 100 pages, at least part of it appears to have been doctored by Russians or those sympathetic to the Russian cause, changing casualty reports, lowering estimates that the United States government had done of Russian casualties in Ukraine and increasing Ukrainian casualties. So there is some disinformation that's out there. If people are going online and coming across these documents, they may not be able to trust that what they're looking at is authentic. But officials I've talked with in the U.S. government acknowledge that much of this, if not most of it, that has leaked is authentic.
Is there any indication of how far they are along as far as figuring out the source of what happened here?
We don't have any specific indications of how far along they are. What we do know, and I can tell you based on my reporting, is it does not appear that there was some sort of hacking of a U.S. government classified server, because the documents that have spread across the internet were photographed. You can see that they are photographed, which indicates that a recipient of a hard copy of these documents took pictures of them, or someone came across these documents who was not authorized to see them and surreptitiously photographed them.
That means, you know, someone was very up close in front and didn't even try to search for them.
What we have seen from these particular documents, which is probably one of the worst leaks, arguably, of sensitive U.S. government information since the 2010 WikiLeaks disclosures, is that these are really sensitive documents, not only dealing with an ongoing war, but also disclosing to some degree how this information was obtained, and indicates that the United States was intercepting signals from such countries as Israel and South Korea, which are friendly to the United States.
We've heard that Ukraine is already altering its strategy, but it sounds to me like, you know, Russia might also be taking advantage of this by changing their method of communication to conceal their planning as well.
Lori, there is no doubt that these documents are not only a treasure trove for the Kremlin, for Russian war planners, but also for the Russian intelligence agencies. However, they are probably very alarmed about what they're reading, not necessarily specific information about the strengths and weaknesses of the Ukrainian military, but there are indications in these documents that the United States has, to a fairly deep degree, penetrated the intelligence services of Russia, which has been allowing the United States to warn Ukraine almost in real time about planned Russian strikes. So this has got to be alarming for Moscow.
Lori London speaking with VOA's Steve Herman. The world reaction to the leak was as swift as it was wide. After last Friday's show was recorded, the managing editor of VOA's Ukrainian service, Tatiana Voroshko, spoke with Mykhailo Podlyak, one of President Zelensky's top advisors. She joins me now to discuss her conversation and Kyiv's reaction to the leak.
Mykhailo Podlyak believes that this leaked document is a part of information campaign on the part of Russia Federation. He does not believe that this leak is authentic. And here are his arguments. He says that Russia is a part that benefits, and it benefits in three following ways. It influences the Ukrainian mood in the country, saying that in those leaks that we see everything, we know everything, and we are ready for the counteroffensive when and if it takes place. It also has internal influence inside Russia, because as we can see, and many experts say that some of the information at least was doctored, so the casualties on the part of Russia Federation are much lower than what the Pentagon and the British Ministry of Defense is saying. So Russia is, the Kremlin is showing to their own population that, see, the casualties are low. And it also creates a rift between the partners. It creates the distrust between Ukraine and its partners. So that's his arguments. Also ask him, how did it influence the planning or relationship between the Ukraine and United States? So he says that, first of all, those documents, the information revealed in this document, some of it might be real, but it's easily obtained through public sources. Also, this information is outdated. It's old, it's from the beginning of a year. So in his opinion, it does not affect the planning of the general staff that it's developing. He also believes that it did not affect relationship between Ukraine and United States and other partners, and intelligence sharing between the parties. So he says that we still inform our partners in all aspects.
So there's a lot to unpack there. One of the first things you said is that he doesn't believe it's authentic. Does that mean he does not believe those were authentic Pentagon documents that were leaked, that this was whole thing was somehow fabricated, and that everybody here in Washington and at the Pentagon is worried ostensibly over nothing?
That was my understanding, but I have to emphasize that this interview was recorded after the first leak, but before the before we knew about the second leak. When I was listening to different reporting analysts, Ukrainian analysts, some of them and many of them are saying that there might be some authentic part, but some information is fabricated. So it's not the general opinion among Ukrainians.
Okay, important distinction there. He believes these leaks were made public to create distrust among the allies. Is that anything you've seen happening?
Yes, I also want to emphasize that the interesting point he brought up is that if those documents were real, then Russia would not release those. They would keep them secret and use them in their military campaign. And in terms of distrust, it's hard for me to say. I'm not in Ukraine. In his opinion, it's not what's happening. But we can see from reporting on the part of Washington Post or CNN that there is a certain degree of anger among Kyiv's military and political leaders. I'm quoting right now Washington Post reporting.
Tatiana Voroshko is the managing editor of VOA's Ukrainian service. For his part, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said on Monday that the leaked Pentagon documents were quite interesting. Asked to comment specifically on a CNN report that said one of the documents revealed that the U.S. has been spying on Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, Peskov had this to say.
I can't comment on this. This can't be excluded. We saw that the leaks are quite interesting, and they're being broadly studied, analyzed, and largely discussed. The fact the United States has long started spying on various heads of states, especially in the European capitals, it has repeatedly popped up.
Asked about claims that Russia could be behind the leak, Peskov replied,
we know this is a widespread inclination to blame Russia for everything, write off everything to Russia. This is a common disease. Therefore, there's nothing to comment on.
Meanwhile, South Korea's government on Monday scrambled to contain the political and diplomatic fallout after it was reported that the leaked documents contained revelations that the U.S. spied on senior South Korean security officials. The situation is awkward for South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol, who has aligned his country more closely with the United States and is preparing for a rare state visit to the White House later this month. A South Korean presidential official said that after the two countries have fully grasped the situation, if necessary, we will demand appropriate measures from the United States. This according to transcripts published by local media. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. The number of attacks against Russian troops and equipment in occupied territories is on the rise, and part of the Ukrainian energy industry is back in business. We get an update on the situation from our reporter in Kyiv, Anna Chernikova.
Basically, we are hearing again and again that there are more explosions happening at the occupied territories, particularly the Zaporizhia region and Donetsk region and also Crimea. And these reports are coming in line with the upcoming active actions, let's put it this way, by the Ukrainian forces that everyone is expecting. Of course, we don't have any official confirmations from the Ukrainian authorities or any official statements on that. The only thing we can say is that this is something that Russian authorities are also reporting. And also in some areas of the occupied territories, Ukrainian authorities who are currently responsible for these areas, but working from the Ukrainian control side, they also confirm this information.
So these are attacks against Russian positions in the occupied territories. What kind of targets are being hit?
According to the mayor of Melitopol, which is currently occupied, it's in the Zaporizhia region, but the mayor is very active in terms of making statements and comments about this. He is saying that for instance, those explosions that were heard in the Zaporizhia region, they are targeting certain military depots and military storages of the Russian forces. Also, we were hearing from Ukrainian officials that some previous explosions were also targeting some military storages, which Russian forces were supplying for a couple of days before that.
Okay, Anna, changing gears a little bit, I understand there are some developments in the Ukrainian energy industry. Can you tell us what's been happening?
So before the beginning of the full-scale invasion, Ukrainian energy sector was in the negotiations with the European energy market to start the exports of electricity to Europe from Ukraine. And at the beginning of the full-scale invasion, these exports began. When back in October, Russian forces started this intensifying attacks on Ukrainian energy infrastructure, Ukraine had to stop these exports and, of course, stop earning money on that to its economy for a certain period of time. And now we're getting confirmation from Ukrainian biggest energy company, Ukrenergo, that actually Ukraine is back to these exports, which is, of course, for Ukraine is a great news because definitely this is something that not only going to support Ukrainian economy, but this demonstrates that actually Ukrainian energy system is getting back on track. For the moment, we know, and it was confirmed that the electricity exports are back to Moldova, and the next in line would be Poland and Slovakia.
And we'll leave it there for today. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
With Russia's war in Ukraine now in its second year, Russia's occupation of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant has Europe on edge, and many Ukrainians are wondering if they'll have electricity. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has the story of an underground squadron tasked with the mission of keeping the lights on.
Two Ukrainian tank crews practice assault drills in the southeastern Zaporizhia region. They are the battering rams carrying anti-tank rockets ahead of a widely expected spring counteroffensive to repel Russian forces in an area that's seen heavy fighting. The International Atomic Energy Agency, or IAEA, has been pleading with both Russian and Ukrainian forces to not wage war near the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, the largest in Europe and a major supplier of Ukrainian energy held by Russian forces for more than a year. Amid the war and the Zaporizhia occupation, the country increasingly turns its sights to what's happening underground to keep the lights on above the surface. These coal miners in the Dnipro region have been given one mission: mine as much coal as before the war.
Today, the country's energy independence is more than a priority and important since the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant withdrew to the uncontrolled territory. Today, coal mining is primarily the energy independence of Ukraine.
Even well below the surface, the war impacts operations. When power goes out, miners can't work. They say it took creative engineering to develop a system of generators to operate lifts. And the war impacts operations more directly, as roughly 650 employees went above ground and to the front lines.
We try not to think about what's going on outside the mine. We work with a smile and forget about it. And when we are leaving, then another life begins, survival and everything else.
The Zaporizhia plant last generated electricity in September before the final of its six reactors went offline. Power lines to the plant have been cut a half dozen times, according to the head of the IAEA, Rafael Grossi. Grossi recently visited the plant, and while he says his goal is to safeguard the facility, he added, as of now, anything is possible at Zaporizhia, from outside attacks to sabotage from within. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
More than 30 children were reunited with their families in Ukraine this weekend after an operation to bring them back home from Russia or from Russian-occupied Crimea, where they allegedly had been taken from areas occupied by Russian forces during the war. Reuters' Jillian Kitchener has that story.
A familiar embrace as children were reunited with their families after crossing the border from Belarus into Ukraine. The reunion of more than 30 children on Friday follows a complex rescue mission after the children were allegedly taken to Russia or Russian-occupied Crimea from Russian-occupied areas of Ukraine. 13-year-old Dasha met her mother again on Friday.
We are very happy. We came back home. We've seen our mom for the first time in half a year.
Dasha's mother, Natalia, said she had traveled from Ukraine to Crimea via Poland, Belarus, and Moscow to get her daughters. She said it was heartbreaking to look at children left behind, crying behind a fence. Kyiv estimates nearly 19,500 children have been taken to Russia or Russian-occupied Crimea since Moscow's invasion, in what it condemns as illegal deportations. But Moscow, which controls areas of Ukraine's east and south, denies abducting children and says they have been transported away for their own safety. The humanitarian group Save Ukraine, which worked to bring the children back home, said no one in Russia was trying to help reunite the children with their parents. It claims some children say they lived with rodents. During a news conference on Saturday, a child brought back from Russia last month said he and others were told every day that their parents had rejected them. The Russian Foreign Ministry did not immediately respond to a request for comment.
Reuters' Jillian Kitchener reporting. And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America, Washington, Z-T-C.